Once upon a time, there was a little baby otter. He loved to go swimming every day in the streams near his home, but one day he got lost. His friends, Water Rat and Mole, got worried. So they launched their little boat and set out to find their friend. And that is where our story begins. They got the boat out. The rat took the oars. Dark and deserted, the night was full of noises and rustling and telling of the busy little population who were up and about. The water's noises were more apparent than by day. Its gurglings were near at hand. The moon rose with majesty till it swung clear of the horizon. They began to see surfaces, meadows, and quiet gardens, and the river itself from bank to bank, softly disclosed, radiant as if by daylight. Fastening their boat to a willow, the friends landed. They explored the hedges, hollow trees, tunnels, ditches, and waterways. Embarking again, they worked their way upstream, while the moon, serene in a cloudless sky, helped them in their quest. Then a change. The horizon became clear. The fields and trees came into sight. A bird piped suddenly and was still. A light breeze sprang up and set the reeds rustling. Water Rat sat up and listened with intentness. The mole looked at him with curiosity. "It's gone," sighed the rat, sinking back into his seat. "So beautiful and strange. Since it ended so soon, I almost wish I had never heard it. For it has aroused a longing in me, and nothing seems worthwhile but just to hear that sound, to listen to it forever. There it is again," he cried. "Now it passes and I begin to lose it," he said. "Oh, mole, the beauty of it, the joy, the clear call of the distant piping, such music I never dreamed of. Row on, mole, row, for the music and the call must be for us." The mole obeyed. "I hear nothing myself," he said, "but the wind playing in the reeds and the rushes." The rat never answered. He was possessed in all his senses by something new that caught his soul in a strong, sustaining embrace. A short quiz. It's just one question. Who are your friends? Make a mental list or scribble on your order of service. Who are the people who trust you, who value your gifts and dreams, who are invested in your well-being? They radiate gladness in your presence, and when you feel confusion, they bring encouragement. Who are your friends? You recall the serenity prayer used by AA groups. I'm to the point where I use the senility prayer, which goes, "Grant me the senility to forget the friends who I never liked anyway, and give me the good eyesight to encounter friends who I will like and can tell the difference." Let's go back to your list. First, okay, you've got your mental list of friends, or what you've scribbled. Cross out the names of family. Yes, they matter, but they are not as friends. Now, cross out the names of those who are business or professional associates. They too matter, but not in the same way as friends. Now, for the remaining names on your list, imagine that you have a bold marker. Circle the names of those who, if you suddenly faced a life crisis, would rearrange their schedule and come spend 3 days with you to offer encouragement. 3 days. They would rearrange and come spend 3 days, not to solve anything, but for encouragement. So you've got circles around some names, I hope. Now, here's the last step. For each of the names that you have circled, put a star next to those with whom you have had a meaningful personal conversation within 30 days. A meaningful personal conversation within the past 30 days. Was this exercise at all interesting? Emily Dickinson wrote, "I'm nobody, who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us. Don't tell. They'll banish us, you know." And that's one view of friends. Let's you and me, a pair of nobodies, hunker down over against the world. I mean, we could meet up in my treehouse or over in your garage, and amidst life's hostility, we will hunker down and get ready for the worst. That's one view. Rainer Maria Rilke wrote, "You playmates of mine in the scattered parts of the city, small friends from a childhood of long ago, how we found and liked one another hesitantly and spoke with our silence. When we were filled with joy, it belonged to no one. It was simply there. And how it dissolved among all the adults who passed by. And in the fears of the endless year, wheels rolled past us. We stood and stared at the carriages. Houses surrounded us, solid but untrue, and none of them ever knew us. We spoke with our silence, and when filled with joy, it belonged to no one. It was simply there." Thought experiment. Recall being in the sixth grade. Where was your hometown then? Your school? Your neighborhood? Maybe a church community? And who were your friends then? Sixth grade. Did one or two of those folks appear on your mental list a few minutes ago? Maybe with circles or stars next to their name. Several years ago, Rob Reiner produced a wonderful film entitled Stand By Me. Let's see if I can get through this. You may recall it. In a small Oregon town live 4 sixth graders. There's sensitive Gordy, tough guy Chris, flamboyant Teddy, and scaredy cat Burn. And one weekend, these guys take off on an overnight hike to search for a missing teenager. Wanting to be heroes in each other's eyes, they set out on an unforgettable trek, one which has little to do with finding the teenager, the body, but it has everything to do with their experience of vulnerability and trust and loyalty. And so they set forth. What do they do? They sneak cigarettes, they tell gross tales about pie-eating contests, they escape junkyard dogs, they cuss because it's neat, they band together whenever the going gets tough. For example, if they're up to their necks in swamp water full of leeches, and when they encounter their hometown's gang of knife-wielding thugs, they discover a strength of character that they never knew they had. And then at last, the time comes for these 4 friends to return home. Summer is concluding. It's a sultry Labor Day weekend. Soon the boys will enter the 7th grade. Over the ensuing weeks and months, their lives will slowly drift apart, as so often happens in that fragile time between elementary school and middle school. their treehouse, one of their many sanctuaries where they had created a spirit of playful camaraderie, it now stands empty. Now they reorder their lives toward being useful. Useful identities. At the end of the film, Gordy has grown up to adulthood. He lives in the suburbs with a spouse and kids of his own, and one day he takes a drive out into the country, and he retraces his hikes along those same dirt roads from long ago in the company of his buddies, Chris and Teddy and Vern. And in deep sadness, Gordy reflects, "You know, in all the years since then, I have never had friends such as those who were my friends back in the sixth grade. Does anybody?" You know, among all the videos our kids watched, Stand By Me was their favorite. I can't help but wonder what has happened to our kids' friendships over the years. And to mine. You know, friendship faces a harsh and cynical culture. Narcissism, rootlessness, violence even. Friendships are vulnerable to superficial sentimentality, the platitudes that can fill greeting cards, or fake reality shows. Question: what models for healthy friendships are you and I leaving for our kids and our grandkids? Do they see in us a devotion of time and effort to friendships that build the human spirit? I mean, given all the time that you and I have had compared to our kids and grandkids, why are our lists with those circles and stars perhaps as short as they might be? Friends require work. It doesn't just happen. Emerson said, "I do not wish to treat friendships daintily, but with roughest courage. When they are real, they are not glass threads or frostwork. They are the solidest things we know." I want to return to our little story from The Wind in the Willows. What happens? Four characters: Mole, Water Rat, Badger, and Toad. Quite distinct in their temperament. Toad lives in the ritziest mansion along the river, maybe like Mar del Lago, who knows. Toad wants an easy elitism, which is his inherited privilege brings. And then there is Water Rat, a stubborn, grungy minimalist. He's quite content in his substandard hole along the riverbank, cruising around in his leaky boat, a boat without designer tail fins and a GPS system. Now the mole, he is the primal child in the story. We watch him mature to claim a kind of equal footing in his friendships with Rat and Badger and Toad. He is mysteriously drawn out of his safe little burrow underground. He could stay in this little burrow of a comfort zone forever, but something draws him out. The mole had been working very hard all morning, spring cleaning his little home. But something up above was calling him, and he made for the steep little tunnel which led to the carriage drive owned by animals whose residences are nearer to the sun and the air. As he meandered along, suddenly he stood by the edge of a full-fed river. Never in his life had he seen a river before, coming up from underground. As he gazed, something bright and small seemed to be twinkling in the heart of it. And then as he looked, it winked at him, and so declared itself to be an eye and a small face gradually began to grow up around him, like a frame around a picture. This is Mole's rite of passage, coming up from familiarity and comfort underground into something else. He enters a space far richer than he had known underground. Mole joins a community that forever is going to change his life. When Mole first tunnels up into the light, he is inexperienced. He's afraid. And yet, his natural curiosity and the call to connection, to friendship, it spurs him on. Mole's life underground had been quite comfortable. But above ground, Mole experiences an exhilarating freedom that he had not known before. Water Rat takes Mole boating and teaches him the ways of the river. There are extra seats in this boat, as always. Friendships, unlike professional and family roles, are a bit different in that they are not burdened with tasks and expectations. Mole and Rat met accidentally, and what they co-create is by chance and not by duty. What they co-create out there on the river is by chance and contingency and serendipity and not by duty and not by usefulness. What do they create? Well, they create imaginative play hosted by the river. It is finally the once-shy Mole who takes the initiative to confront the renegade band of unsavory stouts and weasels that have taken over Toad Hall. They band together to form and to transform Mr. Toad. And notice this about their play together. Just any kind of play will not do. I mean, play can sometimes be misused or wasted, or an obsession that subverts our social obligations to care for one another. And this is the problem with some of Mr. Toad's behavior as he pursues vain fancies that simply feed uncontrolled appetites. Toad's kind of play can be devoid of responsibility. And this is why the three other characters act intentionally and purposefully in order, as the wise badger says, to convert, to make reborn Mr. Toad. I mean, what else are friends for? What else are friends for? I'm going to stand by you. Toad wasn't shamed, exiled, or ridiculed. They built a new community around Toad. When Mole did venture up, he was at risk of being changed, at risk of being changed. You know, at least once each year, I try to reconnect with friends and places which sustained me over the years and decades. I revisit that old brick building, James Reeb Hall at the UU Church of Arlington, where I did my internship so long ago. I returned to San Diego and the Point Loma Lighthouse, the turning point for our research vessels as they headed out to the far distant seas. I chat with ministerial colleagues, Roberta, Michael, Linda, Mary, Karen. And I think of those who, for a whole host of reasons, may have foregone ministry and sought a new vocation. Where might they be today? The purpose of this reconnecting for me is not nostalgia, but it is to ask, what are my opportunities going forward in the time I have left? To invite those friends to journey with me in my little rowboat, such as it is, not to get any place, not to teach skills of rowing, but just perhaps when words have fallen away and there is silence, we just may hear the wind in the willows and the pipers at the gates of dawn. In closing, let me invite you to join in our affirmation by Max Kutz. It's printed in the order service. It may be on the screen as well. We used this last November at a Thanksgiving service, and it's very relevant today. Please join with me in this reading. Let us give thanks for an abundance of friends, for generous friends with hearts and smiles as bright as their blossoms, for feisty friends as tarred as apples, for continuous friends who, like stallions, keep reminding us that we've had them, for crotchety friends sour as rhubarb and as indestructible, for handsome friends as gorgeous as eggplants and as elegant as a row of corn, for funny friends who are as silly as Brussels sprouts and as amusing as Jerusalem artichokes, for serious friends as unpretentious as cabbages, as subtle as summer squash, as persistent as parsley, as delightful as dill, as endless as zucchini, and who, like parsnips, will see you through the winter. For old friends nodding like sunflowers in the evening time. For young friends coming on fast as radishes. For loving friends who wind around us like tendrils and hold us despite our blights, wilts, and witherings. And finally, those friends now come on, like gardens past that have been harvested, but who fed us in their time that we might